This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's AT&T Byron Nelson. Joining me to break it all down, Sia Najad is here. Hello, Sia.
How we doing? Very excited about the AT&T Byron Nelson. Very excited about the PGA Championship coming up. We still got a few majors in this season. This is exciting times. Oh, by the way, I'm also excited because I hit Wyndham Clark at 75-1. So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
If you watch the early wedge, you know that. Or if you remember Sportsline, you know that that was one of my picks. So coming off some heat right here, Rick.
That'll certainly help. The old 75-1 always helps the bank account. We'll see if we can find something for this week. We have a lot to talk about with AT&T Byron Nelson, the golf course, which is TPC Craig Ranch. But first, I will remind everyone that the fan link for the one and done selection is in the description below, so you can get your vote in. Kyle M is building momentum on all of us, so hopefully we can figure out a good selection for this week that is open. And our Tuesday mega preview pod will be at 5 p.m. Eastern time, so your votes need to be in before then so that we can tally. All right. See ya this week. It is always a little bit distracting the week before a major championship where everyone wants to look ahead and everyone wants to call it a tune-up and everybody wants to say whatever they will about this event. But a lot of guys in the field. There's going to be DraftKings contest for it. There's going to be wagers to be made. So we've got to keep our focus here for a bit longer.
Yeah. And, you know, it might be a tune up for a very few select in the field. But I mean, this is all systems go for most of the players in this field. And I think there's a lot of guys at the top that we're going to have to consider in terms of like, all right, which one of these guys do we want to play or which one of these two guys do we want to play? But there's guys in that 8K, 7K range that I think are super sneaky that are not necessarily the household names, even in the non-designated events. And what I'm really saying is there's players I like this week that I don't normally talk about. So I'm just really curious, Rick, to hear your opinion on some of these players. But I like these events. These tend to be the more fruitful ones for me from a DFS standpoint for whatever reason. So I'm ready to attack it.
Well, before we talk about golfers, let's talk about the course. Troy, if you could share my screen, that'd be splendid. Thank you very much. My website, rickrungood.com. This is the course key stats model. Worth noting, Sia, that while this event has been around forever, we've only played it at TPC Craig Ranch twice, 2021, 2022. We have the same champion in both of those editions, K.H. Lee, getting the job done in back-to-back years. So we'll talk through the data. We'll talk through the types of golfers that we think are going to have success, but this is certainly not a golf course that we have a bunch of historic data to go off of. It's just those 2 years.
Just those 2 years. And I like what I'm seeing with your model, because the first thing, I mean, granted, the first thing I see like written out in the correlated stats is approaches from inside 100, but really it's just approach in general, right? I think, again, we don't have a lot of history here, just 2021 and 2022 at TPC Craig Ranch. By the way, just kind of silly that K.H. Lee, of all people, is like the back-to-back winner here. I mean, that's golf in a nutshell. But I'm really looking for approach on Rick Run Good. Of course, Rick, I'm looking at weighted approach, which is something I like to do. I'm looking more globally at weighted tee to green, which is something I like to do. But this week, more than most, I'm really dialed in on approach. Not so much off the tee. Now, listen, I think being great off the tee and having some distance, it's definitely going to help here. But The one thing I've noticed with the leaderboards over the last 2 years, there are a lot of guys that were in that top 10, top 15 that just aren't really good off the tee in general, not necessarily in that tournament. So I'm really not focused too much on that. Around the green game, not super focused on that either. So putting a little bit, weighted approach quite a bit.
Yeah, so the way that the numbers bear out in the model is that approach is ranked very highly from a value standpoint, which it always is, you know, a big value on strokes gained approach because it's generally one of the more correlated stats to success. But also in terms of rank, meaning that it ranks second, there's only one other course on the PGA Tour schedule in which strokes gained approach is more prevalent. And then putting is the other big one, which is seventh, which means there's only six other courses on the PGA Tour schedule in which strokes gained putting is more correlated to success. And I think that makes sense, Sia, because when you play on golf courses with large greens and you play on a golf course like TPC Craig Ranch, which I have heard and I've described myself as kind of like TrackMan golf, which is you just fly it to a number. You don't necessarily have to worry about where you're going to land it, how it's going to spin back. You're not playing the ball on the ground as much as you are on like these firm, fast golf courses. So you're playing a lot of TrackMan golf. So this makes sense. Approach play and putting. Hit it to the right quadrant, give yourself a good look, and then make as many of those as possible because this has historically been a very easy golf course and one you can make a lot of birdies on.
Yeah, we see that with the winner and the people who were trailing the winner. Obviously, that's KH Lee, but guys like Jordan Spieth, people in the top five, they are in the low to mid 20s in terms of what the score is going to be. So you're right, Rick. I mean, I think it's all about creating opportunities for yourself and then draining some of these putts. And again, that what does that mean? Well, it means you have to be kind of a hot putter, or at least have some semblance of a history where you found a hot putter. But more important, creating those opportunities. How are you going to do that? It's likely with that second shot.
The one other thing that I think is worth mentioning is that this golf course has been destroyed so badly through the first 2 years that they've actually turned it from a par 72 to a par 71. Number 12 used to play as a 547-yard par 5. It will now play as a 493-yard par 4. So I don't expect, Sia, the scoring to be as deep under par. But as we know, par is just a social construct. It'll still take the same number of strokes, essentially, to get the job done.
Yeah, and it's just that one little modification. I mean, I think if it does get windy, which I'm not sure it will, but I mean, that's certainly a potential defense for this course. But otherwise, we're going to see some low numbers, some birdie streaks. I mean, another thing maybe to look at is DraftKings scorings. Maybe you want to put an additional filter on that with respect to easier courses and that kind of thing. But you know, this is going to be every single day. We're going to see a lot of scoring.
Okay, well, we've got a top-heavy field and one that I cannot wait to talk about, so we'll dive into that. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS, here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent Island got here.
Walking to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
And we're back. Here's the cheat sheet. Three golfers over $10,000 with Scottie Scheffler bearing down on $12,000. He's $11,900. Jordan Spieth, $10,600. Terrell Hatton, $10,100. So a couple of Texans and an Englishman. Sia, what do you want to do here?
This is so tough because if you want Scottie Scheffler in your lineup, just so you know, it leaves you with $7,620. So what does that mean? It means you're already kind of dipping in the low 7K range just to get that average for the rest of your golfers back up a little bit. So listen, he's got the most win equity. It's just not even a question. I mean, he is an absolute monster. He's had the week off. He's coming here, a quote, lesser event, if you will, to win, obviously. It has the Texas ties as well. I just have a problem building with him. Like, if you want, like, you can't, I don't think you can really build with Scotty and like a 9K guy. If you want to build with, let's say, Scotty and Tom Kim, who's, I believe, 9,600, that leaves you with 7,100. I mean, just again, you can dip into the 6K range, but it is hard to build with Scotty. I'm not saying of the, let's say I build five or six lines, I'm not saying that Scotty's not going to be in any of them. I just, it's hard. Rick, I kind of want to get your opinion here because I think that this is the sort of the elephant in the room. Are you playing Scottie Scheffler or not? Not to say that Spieth and Hatton don't deserve a discussion, but at $11,900, it's not too expensive for Scottie. My question is it too expensive for you to include in your build?
There is no sure thing in golf, but Scottie Scheffler is the closest thing to that right now. Yes. 13 straight top 15s. That is insane. Think about that. Think about not one bad week during that stretch. It's unbelievable. The way he's doing it is super sustainable. It's the tee to green play, and whether he putts well or not, it's the same stuff we've been saying for the last 13 weeks and beyond. So I certainly think he is worth trying to kind of force feed into some of these lineups. Now, if you have to go down, I mean, we're going to get there, but I do think there are some viable options in the lower half of the $7,000 range. I think there's okay options maybe as you get into the $6,000 range. I don't think it's going to be pretty, but I cannot imagine another scenario where, like, Scottie Scheffler is just by far the best player in the field, right? I mean, it's not Scottie and Rahm. It's not Scottie and Rory. It's like Scottie's here by himself, and he's been an absolute destroyer of worlds.
So part of the reason I liked Wyndham Clark last week is because I looked at the top of the board in this designated event, which was, of course, last week at the Wells Fargo. And I'm like, well, you know, you got Rory at the top and, you know, guys like Patrick Cantlay, but they are not Scottie Scheffler and John Rahm. So even though almost since LIV happened, and again, you've chronicled this really well, Rick, and I think we have as a show as well, you see so many favorites winning, so many short odds winning. And last week lent itself to maybe taking some of these guys down the board. This week, though, it's just hard. And I know I'm talking about betting in that context, but in DFS too, it's hard to not take Scottie Scheffler for, Rick, all the reasons you set out. So this is just one of those things. I think one thing you have to know, if you're building with Scottie Scheffler, it's very likely that those builds will include, Rick, some of those guys you just referenced, which we'll talk about, in that low 7K range. So if you're going to take Scottie, maybe just kind of consider that. Ownership's probably going to be, you know, pretty high for him. Maybe just try to figure out a way to differentiate your builds. I do think that low 7K range, to your point, Rick, has some guys that'll be popular. High 7K range as well.
Yeah, I mean, Scottie is going to be the anchor of your lineups. You're going to need him to play well. You're going to need him to probably finish inside the top five and to also not have Jordan Spieth or Terrell Hatton win the golf tournament. Like, that's the path to getting your kind of money back, your value back on Scottie Scheffler. Here's Jordan Spieth, Sia, a very, very ugly miscut at Quail Hollow last week, which I'm generally willing to forgive him for. You know, I was looking through his shot by shot stuff, and to me, it looked like he lost a ton of strokes on like four swings, and he had a bunch of holes where he was a small gainer, which is generally the type of ugliness I would prefer. Don't get me wrong, it was very ugly, lost across the board and lost 5.75 from tee to green. But I think that based on the run of golf that Spieth had prior to this, I'm willing to give the second best player in the field, the guy who loves playing in Texas, the guy who's crushed in Texas, the guy who's been great for the last 2 months, another crack.
Oh, 100% agree. It seems like a great course fit. We know he can be completely dialed in on approach. That off the tee can kind of be sketchy here and there. It's just this is what we're looking for, right? We're looking for guys who are dialed in on approach and who can get hot with the putter. That is Jordan Spieth. So is there a scenario where Jordan Spieth can win it and Scottie Scheffler can be T11? Absolutely. So it makes complete sense to have Jordan Spieth. I'm curious if any of these guys get squeezed, Rick, particularly Tyrrell Hatton, because look at his metrics. Oh my gosh. He's, you know, I missed the boat on him last week. I wasn't on him really in any way for DFS purposes. But at 10,100, I mean, he seems like he could be a pretty good play as well. I think all three of these guys are good plays, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I do find it interesting what the industry is going to do on Tyrrell, right? So you've got obviously the big two in Scottie Scheffler and Jordan Spieth. Hatton had the great metrics and the great finish from last week, but he's never played this event, let alone this golf course. So I think that is leaving something that managers will say, okay, well, that's an unknown. Maybe I'll just pay up for Jordan Spieth. I think it is worth noting, though, look at the run of golf Terrell's had. You know, the finishes in some of these elevated events like T6 in Phoenix, T4 at Bay Hill, runner up at the Players, T3 at the Wells Fargo Championship. I mean, these are just absolutely stacked fields where he gets himself to the top of the leaderboard, and now he gets a little bit of a reprieve, gets to play in a little bit of a weaker field, but one that should still benefit his skill sets. I think it is very interesting, and one of the most interesting questions that we're going to have to answer this week is like, what will everyone do with Tyrrell?
Yeah, and I think he's the one that will be like the lesser ownership of these three. With all of that said, he also, even with ownership in mind, I think I have to rank him third out of these three. I think he's gotten sort of to a level where I don't think he necessarily, I know it's kind of shocking to say this given what you just set out, especially at the designated events, but I think I got to rate this Scheffler, Spieth, and Hatton. And I might be, from a just playing standpoint, I might be more inclined to play Spieth more than either of the other two.
Okay. Breaking news. So 49 seconds ago, Jordan Spieth just withdrew from the AT&T Byron Nelson. He is citing, here's the statement. Over the weekend, I had severe pain in my left wrist and had doctors confirm an injury that requires rest and limited movement. The AT&T Byron Nelson means the absolute world to me, and I'm disappointed to miss it this week. Playing in front of family and friends in Dallas is one of the highlights of my year, and the tournament staff and volunteers are second to none. I look forward to being back next year and many years after. I'm focused on healing as quickly as possible and will have to evaluate my recovery week to week. Sincere thanks to medical professionals who have supported me over the weekend, Jordan Spieth. Wow. So,
whoa.
We are obviously learning about this right now live on the show. That is not good. And obviously would put his chances of playing in next week's PGA Championship up in the air.
I would make it close to 0%. And all I'm doing is trying to dissect the words. When you actually take the time to use the word severe in front of pain, to me, that means that this rest and limited movement he's referring to is probably a multi-week thing.
Well, he says week to week, which is never a good sign. You want to hear day to day when we're only, 7 days out from PGA Championship week. Remember, for as much run as Rory McIlroy at the Masters gets to complete the career Grand Slam, Jordan Spieth is a PGA Championship away from completing the career Grand Slam. So this is very disappointing, very very sad to see. Hoping a quick recovery, but that does not read great.
No, it doesn't. It's kind of shocking to me. I mean, obviously it's shocking, but of all the players to have this injury, especially with on the doorstep of the PGA Championship, this is, it's not good news. I mean, this is one of those things where I'm speculating, but this could be like a 2-month thing. I mean, maybe it requires surgery later. Like, this is not something you want to have. It certainly explains the missed cut last week, but that's not a good situation.
He's also been generally quite healthy in his career. Yeah. So to see that is shocking. Okay, so that is going to create some ripple effects. So now it is only Scottie Scheffler and Tyrrell Hatton at the top of the board. I imagine there is going to be a heavily owned Scottie Scheffler. I will check to see if his odds have already moved, but this is seemingly going to turn into the Scottie show here, Sia.
Yeah, it's a good point about the odds. If you're watching us live, you might want to go to your odds board, because
there are books that are still hanging Jordan Spieth right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, you might want to like, listen, obviously there's a tremendous value on, especially everybody below Jordan Spieth with the odds makers, you know, still having him on the board. So that's something to consider. Yeah. As far as from a DFS standpoint, Rick, a lot of that is going, to your point, pour up to Scottie Scheffler. I think a little bit of it will trickle down to Tyrrell Hatton, but I think this makes Scottie Scheffler just tremendously owned and frankly, for good reason.
Okay. Sorry. Just kind of resetting here and making sure we've got everything in order. Jordan Spieth out of the AT&T Byron Nelson. Okay. The 9K range, Sia, is Hideki Matsuyama, Tom Kim, Jason Day, twice defending champion KH Lee. And then the bottom of the 9K range is Adam Scott, Siwoo Kim, Matt Kuchar.
Yeah, this is a really tough range for me. There's nobody I'm in love with. I mean, the thing about, let me start with Jason Day, because I really liked him last week. And as we know, I think he doubled 17 to miss the cut by one on Friday. You know, the thing about him is even though I loved him last week, he was a little sketchy off the tee as of late. Maybe that doesn't hurt him quite as much here at Craig Ranch, but I'm not sure. And then I heard the vertigo stuff, Rick, with Jason Day. I don't even know if that's an actual thing. I just heard that coming back with Jason Day the last few days. Did you hear that as well? Am I completely making that up?
I did not hear that.
Okay. Then maybe I'm making it up. I thought somebody on the telecast that I was watching, maybe it was, I can't remember if it was SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio or if it was the actual telecast, but I thought somebody referenced vertigo, and I could be completely wrong about that, but in the 9K range, he's certainly somebody I'm considering. I mean, if I liked him a lot last week, I mean, it would be kind of silly for me to just all of a sudden not like him. The other guy I'm considering here, there's two that I'm considering. Adam Scott at 9,200. I'm just not sure what to make of the approach game, because it can be, as we're about to pull up here, it can be a little sketchy here. Obviously, he gained a ton on approach at the Wells Fargo, but prior to that, he had been pretty bad. But I like what we're seeing with the putter and at least his ability to pop on approach.
Yeah, I generally I find a stat profile like this hard to kind of figure out, right? So he loses 7 strokes on approach to the players, gains 3 at the match play, loses 5, loses 3, and then last week, in route to that T5 at the Wells Fargo Championship, he gains 4.6 strokes on approach. And I look at that and say, man, like I feel like I'm buying an all-time high, right? His best approach week since the Memorial in 2020. So going on basically 11 months at this point, it's hard to think he's going to be able to gain 4 or 5 strokes on approach again, just because he hasn't done it enough. But we've seen crazier things happen. So it's tough for me. I probably skew more bearish on Adam Scott than bullish compared to some of the other stat profiles that we've seen, but I find him to be a very difficult guy to figure out.
Yeah, and Tom Kim is the other one where when we look at his metrics, by the way, 17th here last year, which is pretty solid. When we look at his metrics, it is starting to bounce back. We are starting to see the Tom Kim we saw last summer, other than the putter. The ball striking has been great, particularly the last 3 tournaments, 5 out of the last 6. Really good ball striking, actually, and pretty great on approach, at least, you know, a few of those times. The putter has been just very kind of average to bad, certainly bad over the last 2 tournaments. But again, we know he can get hot with the putter. I mean, it's not like it's been that long ago where Tom Kim wasn't drilling it with the putter. It was really mostly like last summer into fall. But I think Tom Kim is interesting. I think he's a decent enough course fit. And we know he can get hot. I just think he's an interesting player now.
Yeah, the putter's one thing, but I do agree with you that like the thing that we loved about him in the fall, last summer in the fall, was he was gaining, you know, stroke per round on approach. He was one of the most elite iron and wedge guys in the world. And then he didn't struggle. It just wasn't that good from the start of the year, basically up until the match play. And now he's starting to get back on track. So yeah, I agree. This is generally a positive stat profile, one that's headed in the right direction, and he's a lot closer than what I think a lot of people would perceive him to be. The only other one that I find interesting is Matt Kuchar, and that's not something I say a lot. He is highly reliant on his short game, which I do not like, but it is impossible to ignore the finishes that he has put together. It's four straight top 25 finishes. He got out of the match play in Austin, or out of his group at the match play in Austin. He finished T3 at the Texas Open. Both of those are in his last 4 starts. He's got the top 25 last week at Wells Fargo, and he's got some of the best 2-year history around TPC Craig Ranch. Ranch, I think it's like a 17th and a 12th. It is a 17th and a 12th. That is right. So I think if there's ever a chance to consider Matt Kuchar, it's here, even though he's not generally type of the guy that fits my model.
Yeah, I was certainly a little troubled with how he was doing it, like the last few tournaments with the short game almost exclusively, other than what we saw at the Valero Texas Open. So, but again, that's a pretty small sample size. I mean, Kuchar is the history here is good. I don't really have a problem with him. It's interesting though, because when we go to the 8K range, there's a guy that's 100 below him. I think between those two guys, I think I'm leaning towards the 8900 guy as opposed to Matt Kuchar.
Okay, well, let's get into that $8,000 range, and we'll continue until we find more value on this board that just got a big shakeup. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You teed us up on Seamus Power. Let's talk about him.
So I'm not normally a Seamus Power guy, but I think the form is starting to come back into play a little bit. And perhaps more importantly, the history here is really good too. And I really have been off course history in large order this entire year. And it's benefited me for the most part, but I like what I'm seeing. The approach game is kind of coming back here a little bit. You know, the putter is hit or miss, but that's okay. Look, hopefully we catch him on a hit day. The off the tee game in around the green game, I'm not particularly worried about, but you know, not a complete disaster there. I just think he's a sneaky guy. I don't know how much ownership he's going to command at 8,900. And I think I'm willing to play him.
T17, T9 in the two loops around TPC Craig Ranch for Seamus Power, one of the better two-year results that we have out there on tour. Okay, we've got a couple other guys, and you know, I do not find this 8K range to be very appealing. I'll make a couple of quick notes here. Aaron Wise is back in the field. He's $8,300 as of right now. He is teeing it up for this event. We have not seen him since before the Masters. We saw him at the Match Play. This was a situation where he said he needed a mental health break. He took some time off. He is coming back. Sia, is there any level of confidence in playing him? Do we reset him back to his 100 round baseline? Do we need to see something before we invest our hard-earned dollars? Like, what are we doing with Aaron Wise?
Yeah, I think we need to see something. It would be different if he was coming back to a place where we knew he was super comfortable and had like pretty decent history. And then we could kind of make the correlation. Well, oh, he picked this one to come back to because he's just more comfortable. We just really haven't seen that with him. I mean, the price is okay considering the field, but the unknown of it, unless he's just super low owned, then of course I'm willing to play the unknown of it. But I don't know. I just think there's guys around him. I mean, listen, Steven Yeager at 8,200, that's another guy. Like, he's probably going to be pretty popular. So Aaron Wise might end up being like a pretty good pivot off of a popular Steven Yeager. But I just right now, without seeing ownership, I'm just not interested. Another guy, though. Go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to say, like, I don't like this range. And yeah, there's only two guys that I find kind of interesting, and it's based on what I think the two kind of important skill sets are this week, which I think it's approach play and I think it's putting. So that narrows it down to Tom Hoge and Christian Bezuidenhout. They at least positive players in both of those categories, while, you know, the rest of the range is filled with guys that can do one of them very well, but are horrible at the other. For example, Matt McNealy, Taylor Montgomery and Aaron Wise in the last 36 have been great putters. They've been horrible on approach. Or flip the other way, Benny on great on approach, not putting it so well. Steven Yeager, great on approach, not putting it so well. So Bez and Tom Hoagie are the only two that are really positive players in both of those categories for me.
Yeah, you know, Tom Hoagie, I can't figure out if we're still in the middle of a Tom Hoagie slump here, but classically, you're right. He can get hot with the putter, and he's certainly usually really, really dialed in on approach. We just haven't seen it a ton lately. That's okay. In this field, maybe, you know, Tom Hoagie finds himself again, but it's Christian Bezedenhout who I really, really like. I mean, I do like Jaeger, but I think he'll be popular. I wonder if as the week goes, people will start to get very familiar with Seabez and start to play him too. But you're right. I looked at the weighted approach on your site, Rick, and, you know, smaller sample size. I went 24 rounds, but it was very good. He's gained on approach 4 out of the last 5. Great with the putter. Good history here. Like, he kind of checks all the boxes.
Yeah, and he gets a big boost because he gains, you know, some of his bigger weeks that he gained strokes were very, very good fields. The Players' Championship, the RBC Heritage. So if you gain 3.5 and 4 strokes on approach those weeks like he did, you're certainly going to get a you know, extra credit when it comes to the weighted stuff. So I think the 8K range is generally pretty bad. I don't think that there's a lot of difference between some of these guys in the 7K range, but I do think the 7s are pretty interesting if you want to jump down there.
I do want to also mention, because the 7s are likely to be popular, which they always are, but keep in mind that the sentiment generally is going to be that the 8K range is something to skip over, especially with those Scottie Scheffler-oriented lineups, because, you know, you can't really flirt too much with the 8K range with an 11-9 guy in your lineup. So just something to consider. Like, there are definitely some pivots in this range. I think Seamus Power is going to be one of them. I'm not going to play Taylor Montgomery. I mean, I might be willing to play an extremely low-owned Maverick McNealy, maybe. Tom Hoagie likely to be more in the pivot range just because of his price. Minwoo Lee, I think, is interesting. Hadwin, I don't think many people are going to play. He's interesting. So it's just something to consider. I mean, JJ Spawn's another guy at a flat 8K that I think is worthy of a conversation if the ownership is low. And again, with the builds that we're likely to see, this 8K range is going to be low. 7K range, I have my eye on so many guys, but instead of just naming them all, I'm going to name like 4 or 5. And Rick, maybe when you name some 7K guys, you'll call out some of the other guys I was thinking of.
Let's go back and forth a little bit.
Yeah. So let me start then with Joseph Bramlett. He's good. Like, he's just a good golfer. Like, I'm not putting him in the Wyndham Clark category, but to me, he's one of those golfers that 6 months, 8 months, a year from now, I think is going to be in a different sort of sphere of golfers, a different price of golfers. Weighted approach looks good. Weighted tee to green looks good. Great ball striking over the last 2 tournaments. No stranger really to popping in the ball striking department. So he hasn't always put it all together, but I think it's 7,900. He's a pretty good value in this field.
He has an elite skill set, the way he drives the ball, and he's starting to form the rest of his game. It is something that, you know, unfortunately, like, we never really saw Cam Champ do at any point in his career. He kind of remained just that really great driver of the golf ball. Now he's got multiple wins on the resume. Joseph Bramlett would trade for that. But I do like to see these guys that have a really elite skill set starting to put everything else around it. You know, to go back to the Wyndham Clark stuff, Wyndham Clark was kind of like a 1.5 trick pony, you know, 18 months ago. And now he's got a couple of weapons. So I'm not quite ready to anoint Joseph Bramlett, but I do like the trajectory. I like that he's building on the best parts of his game without losing them. That is generally a good thing. So yes, Bramlett getting better and better week in and week out, I think is someone worth watching.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to skip over 1 or 2 guys and hoping that maybe you end up naming them. Okay. Sam Stevens is another guy that's at least interesting to me. Weighted approach was really good. He's gained on approach, by the way, 4 in a row. Very hit or miss with the putter, which, for the record, a lot of the 7K guys I like are very hit or miss with the putter, especially in that low 7K range. We know he has some upside because we've seen the second place at the Valero. So I think he's pretty interesting here at 7,600.
I'll offer up Eric Cole, who you'll hear a similar refrain from me. I like approach play. I like putting. Eric Cole has, I'll round up on these very, very small losses, but he's basically gained strokes on approach every event dating back to Vegas, which was like 12 events ago for him. And then we've seen him be a positive putter and the ability to get hot. You know, you gain 6 strokes putting in Mexico. You finish T5. You gain 8 at the Honda Classic. You finish runner up. But I think he's got a good comp, a good 2 complementary skill sets, especially on a golf course like this, that he would certainly be someone to consider.
Yeah, Eric Cole has been actually pretty good. A couple things in the chat I want to point out. It was Zach Jeffers who just wrote in here. Day admitted in an interview the vertigo is back. Oh, there we go. Match play and Augusta seems to be stress driven. So just something to maybe monitor there. I mean, I don't think he's going to withdraw from the tournament. It doesn't seem like it's that type of issue, but you know, so maybe that drives his ownership down. Maybe, you know, that becomes hot news. And then all of a sudden he becomes a really, really good play in that 9K range. But the other one I wanted to point out, this is interesting, going back up to the 7,900 range. For whatever reason, before I looked at the metrics, I thought Davis Riley would be a great course fit. I just thought like this wide open type of course, easy scoring. I thought Davis Riley might be good. And I see Joshua George in here talking about him. Good history here, bad recent history. Weighted approach is actually okay, even though the approach numbers in general just don't exactly speak to me. But any thoughts on Davis Riley? I can't imagine he commands too much ownership.
No, I don't think so. I find this is like a perfect example of why golf handicapping is so hard, right? Withdraw, cut, win, cut. Like,
yeah.
What a sick world we live in. You know, I thought that, and I still kind of do think that we were getting improvements, right? You know, not these guys, they're unable to go out and just flip a switch and be amazing week in and week out. But I thought we were seeing some good trends again in the ball striking categories back, not quite to where we saw last summer from Davis Riley, where he was piling up those top five finishes. But I thought that we were getting back on track and heading in the right direction. So we'll see. I don't love the fact that he's hemorrhaging strokes with the putter, but I'm willing to cut him some slack. He's coming off of a win, your very first win of your career. It's easy to take a sigh of relief, and now you've got to figure out how to readjust and get back at it. So yeah, I'm generally more positive on him moving forward than I have been as of late.
Yeah, and the thing is, when you're looking at the stats, it's just unfortunate that we don't, and I know the Zurich Classic is just a finicky setup, but he was really good. You know, I expected him and Nick Hardy to really wilt on Sunday in particular, and they were both actually really good. But I think Davis Riley was more carrying that team than it was Nick Hardy. So he might have found something that the stats aren't really telling us because we don't have the actual metrics from the Zurich Classic. So just, again, the rest of the stats don't really paint the best picture, especially with the putter. But he's the type of guy that almost like, because you brought up Cam Champ, to me, he's almost that type of guy that just like will have four missed cuts and then a second place finish somewhere. And right. I think with this field, it's more likely than not that this would be the type of tournament where that would happen. Three other names I'm going to mention real quick. I want to see if any of them are on your radar in the 7K range. Nate Lashley, Ryan Palmer, Charlie Hoffman. Any of those strike a chord with you?
They weren't the ones that I had labeled, but there was Lashley's been interesting, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'll pull up his stat profile here, but I think you'd be pretty surprised to see the gains that he has had on approach and just generally how good he has been, right? We're not crowning him here, but in a field like this where he's got a couple of decent finishes in a row and the metrics are trending in the right direction. I mean, just look at his last 100 rounds here, right? I mean, you're starting to see legit tangible gains where he's beating the field week in and week out. So that of those three that you mentioned, this is the one that I think most people probably don't realize how well he's been playing.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the perfect profile, which is why I think when we get to the low 7K range in terms of like building lineups, I think a lot of people will end up falling on Nate Lashley. So that's certainly something to monitor, but I don't think his ownership is going to get like out of control or anything, because at the end of the day, it's still Nate Lashley. But yeah, this is like the perfect, like the approach play has been pristine and the putter has been very good for the most part. So really like that one. You know, I mentioned Hoffman and Palmer because, well, first of all, do they both have Texas roots? Palmer certainly does, but I don't know if Hoffman does, but regardless.
San Diego guy, I think.
Okay, fair enough. The ball striking has been pretty good with these guys, both of them. It's just the putter that has been a real, real big issue. I don't really know what to do with that because I am looking for good putters. But I mean, you can't deny this ball striking from Hoffman's been pretty great.
Yes, that is true. And I always see, like, I'll be watching the leaderboard and I'm like, oh God, it's Charlie Hoffman guy. Like can't shake him. Right. Like he's always kind of around, or at least early in the event. The other two that I kind of had earmarked here were Dylan Wu, who we spent a lot of oxygen on. So I don't think I need to spend much time here, but I mean, he is gaining. He gained 3.5 strokes on approach of the Wells Fargo Championship in that field. I mean, he is gaining in all the places you want him to be gaining. He's putting well. I love the way this sets up for him. And then the only other one was also in that mid $7,000 range, Michael Kim. So Mike Chim, yeah. So he's got a couple of top tens here in his last handful of starts. He hasn't missed a cut since the Honda. A lot of green here, a lot of good, well-rounded metrics. He played phenomenal last week, the Wells Fargo Championship. He gained across the board. He did it in all the right ways. So those are guys that I think are interesting in the mid sevens, which, as you mentioned, Sia, you know, if you are going to Scotty Scheffler, now you are kind of headed to this range naturally.
Yeah. And the good news is there's a lot of pivots. Like, so in other words, if we get some, and I don't want to make this like an ownership show, like play the guys you like for the most part. But you do want to be conscious of where sort of the builds are collecting, which are going to be in this low 7K range. So if your construction is going to be the same, then you should probably consider some pivots as well. So, I mean, again, if it becomes like Nate Lashley and maybe Michael Kim, or maybe he's probably a bad example, but there's a few guys that it might collect on. I think guys like even Patton Kizzire are in the conversation. Robbie Shelton, Vincent Norman. I think all of these guys are in the conversation for pivoting purposes. And again, that includes Ryan Palmer, who I mentioned before, who for the record was 35th at the Wells Fargo.
One more, Mark Hubbard. He's gained 11 strokes on approach in his last two starts, Mexico and Wells Fargo, T18, T27, missed the cut at Zurich. I don't care. It's a team event. And then T11 at the RBC Heritage. Also, I believe he has two top 35s at TPC Craig Ranch. He's got, T34, T32. So pretty good value for a guy amongst peers who either don't have history, don't have good history, who aren't playing well. At least Mark Hubbard can check some of those boxes off.
Yeah, I love that stat profile. I'm in on Mark Hubbard for sure.
The $6,000 range, this is Bryce Garnett, Henrik Norlander, James Hahn, et cetera, down to a bare minimum, Parker Coody, JJ Killeen, Derek Ernst, Bo Van Pelt. What do we want to do here in this section of the board?
This one's tough. I'm going to go right back to Carson Young. I'll tell you that. He barely missed the cut. I had a lineup that could have won. I think it was the $12 single entry, and it had Xander and it had Wyndham Clark, but it had a missed cut as well, and that was Carson Young. But honestly, I'm not super disappointed with how he performed last week at the Wells Fargo. Listen, he was, 6,200 or 6,600? 6,100. That's right. It was 6,100.
I think you should be, not that you shouldn't be disappointed in this stat profile. You should be encouraged by this.
You're right. You're right.
He gained strokes to the field and missed the cut on the number. He did everything exactly the way you'd expect him. His putting numbers were in line. His around the green numbers were in line. His approach numbers were in line. And he had the worst driving week, which is not a terrible week. He lost a stroke and a half in two rounds since the start of 2023. That's the only thing. It was a little bit off. It's unlikely to happen again. The rest of his game was completely in line with expectations.
Totally agree. So I'm definitely back on Carson Young. I've been back in this guy. I probably, as a show, have been back in this guy for at least three or four tournaments now. So I'm happy to go right back to him. It gets a little dicey the rest of the way. I thought about Bryce Garnett because of his course history and recent history, but I think I ended up landing on Kevin Chappell more than I did Bryce Garnett. As we pull up his profile, it's just nothing super impressive, but he has good history here, and that was part of it.
Who was the other one? It wasn't Bryce Garnett.
Kevin Chappell.
Kevin Chappell.
The approach play with Chappell in particular, weighted approach, I was reasonably impressed with.
Yeah.
So we see it here.
This would be Greg Ducharme's pale guy of the week, right? He's just slightly positive kind of everywhere. Yeah. This is actually a pretty decent profile, and only the one miscut dating back to the Honda. Yeah. That is better than I would have guessed it is. Let me see. I thought I had one more. Carson Young was absolutely on my radar. He's 6,700 this week. I thought I had one more, but maybe I don't. It's a pretty ugly range.
It is. Let me look up, and I'm sorry I didn't look this guy up before, because he has been on my radar a little bit. This name will surprise you. Sean O'Hare. He is 6,700. That's a little rich for
played well at Zurich.
Right. But you know, we're seeing some, I don't know. He's been okay with the putter. He's been okay on approach. But honestly, with this profile, I would have thought he would have been a little less than 6,700, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it is a little rich. I mean, I'd rather play like Trevor Werbelow or I don't know. I mean, there's just
How about Roger Sloan? Dallas resident. I think he's been playing over on the Korn Ferry Tour. I mean, he was on the PGA Tour a couple years ago.
Yeah, he's been playing on the Korn Ferry. So he's got...
Yeah,
he's been okay. He's gained strokes to the field. So his last four, he's made three cuts. T31, T21, T36. Then his most recent start, which was 2 weeks ago, was a missed cut. But again, he missed the cut on the number. So like when you see somebody who gains less than a stroke to the field but misses the cut, that means he missed the cut on the number because they're taking, you know, 144 guys or whatever down to T65 in ties. It's not It's not the end of the world. But that is not bad. How much is he?
6,200.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, anytime you start getting to like bare minimum, you're really not asking much for, you're asking for like a made cut.
Right.
And then hopefully you are using that salary cap flexibility to get access to guys that are going to finish inside the top five.
Right. It's pretty much exactly what we were doing with Carson Young last week, frankly. Mm-hmm. And for the record, he made the cut here and finished 34th in 2021. So still, that was at TPC Craig Ranch. How about Derek Lamley? That's just the last name I'm going to mention. He's 6,100.
I don't think... I'm going to pull up his stat profile. I don't think he's playing all that much, is he? Let me look up Derek. I thought... Unless I'm getting him confused with somebody else, I don't think he played... Well, okay. So he played in Mexico and finished T66. Great ball striking numbers. Lost seven strokes.
Oh, my gosh.
Missed the cut at Zurich. I don't care about that. Missed the cut at the Korn Ferry event. T21 in Puerto Rico. So, I mean, his last two individual... And then he doesn't have a Korn Ferry or a PGA Tour start since the 3M of last year. So that's last summer. So it's only four, but his last two individual PGA Tour events have been fine.
Can you go round by round with this Mexico Open for him? Because I seem to recall him being somewhere near, not the top of the leaderboard, but like way high up. I wouldn't be shocked if it was round four that he just collapsed there.
Talking about Lamley, right? Derek Lamley.
Yeah.
All right, let's see what we can find from old Derek here.
Didn't think I was going to be asking you about Derek Lamley.
All right, we can find it. So he gained strokes three out of the four rounds. He lost big on Saturday.
Right.
He was actually, he actually gained. This is actually, so round one, he gains a stroke and a half from tee to green. He gains 3.5 in round two. He gains 4 in round four, but he putted pretty bad all week long and then punted it from tee to green on Saturday. It's not, I love the tee to green upside.
When you look at the round by round, I mean, it's very easy for me to say like, oh, just take out the worst round. But if we took out the worst round and the best round,
yeah,
that's a pretty good stat profile.
Yeah. I don't hate it. It's a pretty bad range, $6,100. I don't know if he's been playing. So I've got six tours on my site. I don't know if he's playing like PGA Tour Australasia or something like that, right? But
I mean, he also played the Zurich Classic and it didn't look like that went too poorly. I don't remember who his partner was, but well, that's something to be said for that.
All right, well, while I look that up, Zurich Classic leaderboard, we'll find out who Derek Lamley's partner. Do you want it to be someone bad or someone good? You want it to be someone horrible, right?
So I want it to be somebody horrible. Yeah,
sounds like he carried them to, oh boy, it was Mark Hubbard.
Oh, shoot.
So Hubbard's pretty good.
Hubbard's not bad. Not that he's great or anything, but yeah, he's a different class of golfer.
They went 64-73. So really, they just struggled an alternate shot. They played all right in best ball.
Which probably means Derek Lamley struggled in alternate shot.
Probably. All right. All right. I will stop sharing my screen. We will transition to a little fun and games here on the First Cut Pod. We'll do some strokes gained narrative. So this is lineups that are constructed by listeners and fans that can be submitted on Twitter to Sia, to at First Cut Pod, and with the hashtag SG narrative. And it's usually based on something tournament related, so on something sponsor related, the state, the city that we're in, whatever people can come up with to create a narrative lineup. So Troy, do we have these? All right. So here is submission number one from Rebecca. She says, Byron Nelson is in Texas. So a tribute playlist, of course, from a classic rock group from Texas, which is obviously ZZ Top.
Okay, so here's the thing. I gotta tell you this because the timing of it is pretty bad. We have four, so we'll have another screen with two more. The GOAT is on there, John Markowski. Ryan's from the Fantasy Bunker. His isn't on here because it was kind of tricky. It like tiered on like two different sheets or whatever because it was very creative, but it didn't get up here. Part of the reason also is because Rebecca is a new fan to the show. Okay, I don't know if you remember her from last week, but she said I'm giving this a try. She watches this show now, which is great. But also it's her birthday today, her 40th birthday. She was in the early edge chat and everybody was wishing her a happy 40th birthday. So I was like, all right, I got to bump Fantasy Bunker today, even though he's always great because it was like kind of on two different sort of tweets. And I'm going to put the birthday girl in here. So even though I don't even really know these ZZ Top songs, Rick, I figured let's give Rebecca a back-to-back appearance here.
All right. Happy birthday, Rebecca. Well, here's what she's come up with. So I'm imagining there's a lot more cultured ZZ Top fans out there who will understand this better than I will. But she's got Sharp Dressed Redman, Scott Me Under Pressure. That's obviously Adam. Gim Lee, All Your Lovin', KH. Just Got Dade, Cheap Sunglasses. That's Sung Kim. And then, oh boy, is this Jesus Jew Scheffler Kago? What?
Chicago? I don't know. I don't know what's going on with that one.
I hang my head in shame for not knowing, Rebecca, but thank you and happy birthday. At T2 Greens, Oracle says Craig, in parentheses, Greg Ranch, and AT&T, Byron Nelson. Oh, Craig T. Nelson, which is sitcom coach star Craig T. Nelson in honor of Sia's bracket. So these are looking like they are television shows.
Sitcom specifically. So I did a best sitcom bracket with Pat Mayo. We did a bunch of podcasts. We like released a bracket. So this is sort of a play on that. Craig T. Nelson, the show coach, was actually one of the shows in that best sitcom bracket. So he's taken that and he's throwing out some sitcoms.
Okay. So here we go. Fresh Prince of Bel Air, Eric Cole. Bang. Love it. Brandon, Woo's the Boss. Great. Marty, Dow, I Met Your Mother. Perfect. KH, Family Guy. Perfect. Carl, Mad About You On. And Charlie, Two and a Hoffman.
That's Oracle's best ever. A lot of his are like kind of confusing. This is his best ever.
That was pretty top notch. Well done. Next page. The Model Maniac goes to AT&T Byron Nelson, his cell phone. Okay. So here we go. Eric Cold Call. Hideki, what's your number? Adam Long Distance Call. Grayson, No Signal. Dylan, Woo's Calling. And Aaron, Riphone 14.
That's strong.
Pretty good. John Markowski says, Byron Nelson was born in 1912. That is, I actually saw that today. Byron Nelson he died in like 2006 or something. I think he was 96 years, something outrageous. Other notable 1912 events. Well, of course, John, why not? Stewart, sinking of the Titanic. Dylan Woodrow Wilson, elected president. New Mexicote Gribble became the 47th state. Fenway Parker Cootie opened. K.H. Lee Electric Blanket invented. And William McGirl Scouts were funded. Do you think it's crazy that the electric blanket's been around for over 100 years?
I'm trying to think of what's the craziest one of this. I really had no concept of when the Titanic sank. So this is like kind of like, I mean, I understand it was a long time ago, but that's news to me that it was 1912. Girl Scouts. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's crazy. Yeah. I mean, 1912. Yeah, that does sound crazy to me. What you're saying is you think it would have been like in the 30s or the 40s or the 50s or something?
Or like in the 80s. Right. Like, yeah. my only reference for like a heated blanket is like something you'd buy on QVC. Mm-hmm. And like you'd have it at home and like you'd plug it in and it'd be like Christmas time. Like I don't like the idea that that's been around for 100 years. Like, how did they sell it? Like I only imagine it being sold on QVC. So whenever QVC is when I think the electric blanket was founded.
A funny thing about my childhood real quick, I used to have like sleepovers with my friend Austin Kramer, who was still my best friend since first grade, or one of my best friends since first grade. Long story short, when it got really late at night and we were still up because we were all hopped up on candy that we got from 7-Eleven, we would watch QVC and just sort of like laugh at it. Like the but wait, there's more part, like that whole, all the antics of that, like trying to like grab the listener. We would literally watch it for like an hour or two every night I was over there. It's so entertaining. You got to watch. Even now, it's high comedy. It's great.
Yeah, that is literally all I think about when I think of electric blankets. So that is shocking to me. Fenway Park. I knew Fenway Park and the Titanic were the same year. New Mexico becoming a state, the 47th state. So think about that. I think that's the other thing is what Hawaii's the 50th state. And that was like relatively recent, all things considered.
Yeah. Like, and somebody had tweeted a comment to this one that Arizona was the 48th state. And that was like a month later, for whatever that's worth.
Hawaii didn't become a state until 1959. Right? So wait, my dad was born and there were only 49 states. He's not that old. Still plays golf like 6 days a week. All right. I guess we're done here. Anything else?
Rebecca's in the chat. Everybody say happy birthday to Rebecca in the chat. I'm just seeing this.
She clarified it was Jesus Just Left Chicago is the name of that song.
Ah. All right.
Sorry, Rebecca. Let's stick with we're good on TV shows, maybe some movies. Songs is where this thing starts going off the rails. Okay. We'll be back on Tuesday for a mega preview pod for this week's Byron Nelson round by round recaps. And then obviously we will roll right into the PGA Championship. Big thanks, producer Troy, doing all the hard work behind the scenes. Sia Najad available on Twitter at Sia Najad. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.